Many colleges have reported major spikes in the coronavirus in recent weeks as dorms have reopened and classes have started. The University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill sent most undergraduates home after clusters popped up in campus housing. Notre Dame delayed in-person classes as students tested positive by the dozens, then the hundreds. Clemson, Baylor, Louisville, and dozens of other Division I universities reported cases in their athletic departments. And at Iowa State, aggressive testing of students moving into dorms turned up scores of cases. The New York Times, August 26, 2020. The data as of August 25, 2020. Welcome to Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. The New York Times reports on August 26 that as colleges and universities open for the fall, data in a survey conducted of more than 1,500 American colleges and universities has revealed at least 26,000 cases since the pandemic began. The Times says this data shows where the virus has been identified over the course of the pandemic, not necessarily where it is prevalent today. The Times has counted more than 20,000 additional cases at colleges since late July. Many of those are new infections from this month, but others may have emerged earlier in the pandemic. Do these numbers indicate that as colleges and universities open for the fall semester, we can expect a spike in the number of cases nationally and particularly in our area here at Salisbury University? My guest today is Adam Wood, a frequent visitor to Delmarva Today. And Adam is here with us to update us on Salisbury University's plans to assure that students, faculty, administrators, and other staff are safe as the university begins its new term. Dr. Wood is the outgoing president of the Faculty Senate at Salisbury, former chair of the Department of English, and past member of the Committee on Academic Freedom and Tenure. Dr. Wood, welcome to Delmarva Today.
Pleasure to be here as always.
Well, it's good to have you back again, Adam. Adam, because there is no national tracking system and colleges report differently, these New York Times numbers are not used for comparison purposes among universities, but are reflective of a sudden spike in cases due to the return of students and others to the nation's colleges and universities. In addition, because there is no national plan for combating the virus, colleges and universities are basically on their own to devise and implement plans to keep their students and others safe. Update us, if you would, on SU's plans for welcoming students back to the campus and how these plans may have evolved since we talked a little over a month ago.
Yeah, well, you know, it's been largely the same past month. The university took a couple of different approaches to this. The first one, since most students were not on campus over the summer, was focusing on getting faculty ready to hit the ground running in the fall. And the last numbers I saw, if I remember correctly, was about 25% of us are trying to teach face-to-face. I'm in that group. About 40% or so are doing some sort of hybrid sort of model. And then about a third or so are fully online. Right now, some of these online courses are considered remote, where they're doing it live over Zoom, just like that. You know, I've only had one class this week. We just started this week, and I taught my classes yesterday. But because of some lingering concerns about the numbers of students who have not yet been tested or the results have yet been posted, I decided to have my first opening class over Zoom. I just thought better safe than sorry. So again, I think it's one of these things that you know, the faculty have really been prepared for this. The campus has been set up as safely as it can be. Classrooms are set up socially distanced. You know, one of my bigger classes has 24 students, and I'm in a room that holds 100 and some normally, but the seats are spaced 6 feet apart. Everyone's supposed to wear masks and all these things. And so in that sense, there's been, I think, some really good preparation here. Of course, the one complication that we can't factor into thing is how students will behave. You know, we might want to say on the one hand that they're adults and that they should behave like adults, but at the same time, we have to remember they are college students, and college students are going to do what college students do. You know, there's already been, from what I understand, a report of a fairly large party this past weekend. Some students have been cited for being out in places that they shouldn't be. I don't know the specific numbers of that. You know, I don't think that's been released yet. But we recognize that that is really where the challenge is. You know, faculty are being updated the day of, or at least the day before their individual classes, letting us know if students are clear to return or not. But at the same time, we're having issues where things can pop up sort of immediately. You know, I just had a student email me last night that she had just come down with it or just gotten the test for it, or just gotten the results at least. And so she needed to be, not face-to-face for at least 2 weeks. And so again, you know, this is something that we're just going to have to be watching constantly throughout the semester, making changes. You know, there are some sort of running gambles on how long we're actually going to be able to maintain face-to-face. And again, I think a lot of this, unfortunately, is really put to the students on how they behave when they're outside of the classroom.
Well, how many students, Adam, are currently on campus for in-person instruction, and that would include the number of students living in the dorms right now who have moved into the dorms?
Yeah, I don't have an exact number on that, unfortunately. I tried to get the most recent numbers, but wasn't able to. You know, there are a lot more students who are staying on campus than are taking face-to-face classes. You know, a lot of these students who are in the dorms, their classes are mostly, if not entirely, online. And so again, we've got two different sort of setups here, that the classroom spaces are one place where it's a bit easier to monitor and to enforce distancing and things like that. In the dorms, you know, this is a really difficult thing, that you cannot constantly be watching students and how they interact. You know, dorms are designed for close interaction. And so my guess is that if we do begin to see cases, it will be in the dorms, but we also have to remember a lot of students live off campus where there's even less monitoring. And so again, you know, you think about the party that I mentioned had been busted over the weekend. You know, there's at least 40 some people who are gathered at these parties drinking as college kids do. I'm sure most were not wearing masks. And so again, this is the really complicated thing, is the stuff that we can't really monitor. You know, in the classroom, I can enforce masks. I can enforce social distancing. You know, any number of these sorts of things. Once they are out of the classroom, it becomes a lot tougher to really monitor them.
Well, I want to ask you a little bit more about that in just a minute, but the students and including faculty and others, admin staff, staff generally, what's the protocol at SU for entering the campus? What do you have to do in order to get on the campus?
Theoretically, everyone has to be tested beforehand, right? And so for a lot of the employees and even for some students, SU set up its own sort of testing center. You know, I was tested on August 14th. They had this big outdoor area. People were lined up 6 feet apart. And, you know, you made these appointments and get the Q-tip shoved up your nose. And so there was a good attempt to at least get all the faculty and staff tested. Those results, the ones that are being done by SU, are being sent to University of Maryland, Baltimore, where they have a medical college there. And so we're getting those tests back pretty quickly, I think usually within 2 to 3 days. So I was tested on Friday, August 14th. And if I remember correctly, it was late Monday after the Monday after that in the afternoon that I got an email saying that I had tested negative. One of the complications is that people who are having their tests done elsewhere need to get that information to campus, right? So as soon as the on-campus tests are done, they're, you know, and the results are returned, they're pretty much instantly updated in the system. I think there is some lag time, unfortunately, with outside tests. I think there are also some students who didn't know that they needed to send these tests in. So testing is the first one, right? In order to come to classes face-to-face, you have to have tested negative. SU has also implemented an app that faculty, staff, and students are supposed to check in on every morning. You report if there's any new symptoms or anything like that, and then it gives you a green light if you are cleared to come to campus. Again, a lot of the trouble with this is that it relies on self-reporting. You know, I've gotten in the habit of just doing it every morning, no matter what day of the week, whether I'm coming to campus or not, just to remind me to do it. But again, the concern is when you have a large student population, will they remember to do it, right? And one of the other complications with that, with self-reporting, is are people going to be honest about things, right? We may feel, you know, oh, well, I my chest is a little tight today, but I don't think it's anything important. So if you say no to that, you could be missing a very important system. We also know just from a lot of the data that younger people do not get the symptoms as bad as older people or people who are at higher risk. And so again, one of the concerns is that students may have symptoms that they don't really recognize as COVID symptoms in that way. But theoretically, so again, everyone is supposed to have showed up with a negative test, and everyone is supposed to be checking in daily. They will also be implementing, from what I understand, sort of random testing, right? Where they will ask, I think this is done predominantly for students, you know, students just kind of randomly on campus, hey, can we give you a COVID test? How successful that will be remains to be seen. You know, I know that there are other institutions that are taking some sort of stronger measures. I think it was the University of Arizona that I heard about that was regularly testing the sewage pipes that flow out of dorm buildings, you know, regularly throughout the day, just to see if there's any COVID showing up there. They may need to implement some stronger policies, some stronger procedures, depending on how things go. You know, unfortunately, I think a lot of it is just kind of seeing what this first week looks like and then going from there. You know, a lot of the schools that you cited in your opening, again, they did open and made it for about a week before they realized that this was just untenable, right? That this was going to be a very serious health crisis. And again, in a lot of these towns where you see that, you also see, I was reading a story just yesterday about mayors, you know, town mayors who are posting on social media photos of, you know, large groups of college kids at bars or at parties. And again, that's where the danger is really going to happen. So I think, unfortunately, we're just going to have to see how this week plays out. And next week, we'll have a much better sense of how effective this really is. And again, you know, I think blaming the students, I seem to put a lot on that. I don't think it's right to blame the students, right? This is what students do. A lot of them said, hey, I want to go back to college. I want to have the college experience. And I understand that completely. The question is for every university, not just here at SU, was that a responsible decision to make, right? I know that we may get to some of the economic issues if students hadn't showed up a little bit later on, but that is really the position that universities are in. Without the students here paying room and board fees, dining hall fees, a lot of those kind of things, universities are taking a massive, massive hit, right? Some of the big universities have a sufficient stockpile of money, but a lot of smaller schools simply do not have that. And so if you don't have students back, it could be catastrophic economically. If you do have the students back, it could be catastrophic in terms of a health crisis. So it's kind of an impossible position to be in, really.
Let me follow up on the protocol, Adam, for just a moment. Is this a form that the students fill out each day? They check a box, or what do they do? And do they take their temperature? What else do they do? So then they hand in this form Is that what happens?
No, it's an app on the phone, right? So.
Adam, I'm a little behind the times here. I think of checking boxes. I don't think of apps on phones yet, but I need to do that, of course.
No, it's an app on the phone, and again, it asks you, and I would pull it up and read it off to you, but I did it this morning, so it won't let me pull it up again until tomorrow, but asks you 10 or 12 questions. You know, have you been having any new cough? Have you been having any new nausea or diarrhea? Have you been having any new breathing issues? Have you had loss of smell or taste, things like that? And one does ask if you were running a temperature. All students, faculty, and staff, when I understand, were given these little care packages that included a mask, a couple other things, hand sanitizer, but also included a thermometer. So theoretically, at least, we know that all students have the capacity to do this, to fill out this app. Again, though, one of the concerns is if you don't feel as if you're running a temperature, do you take your temperature? How many students or even faculty and staff are going to be taking their temperature every single morning and self-reporting? Again, there's really not another way to do it without, you know, coming in and taking everybody's temperature forcefully, which you can't really do. And so, again, I think students, faculty, and staff are well-equipped to do this if they are following the policies and procedures and are following CDC, you know, best guidance in terms of social distancing. Again, you know, just being on campus the other day, I saw two students jogging, you know, about a foot away from each other. Neither one of them had masks. Now, hey, maybe they're roommates and they feel comfortable in that way. But again, you just sort of, the concern is that an incident like that could very quickly turn into something much, much worse.
How many cases are you aware that the university has identified so far? Now, I know you've only been for a week or a little more than a week, so this is still fairly early.
Yeah, and a lot of that data has not been released yet because they're still in the process and they're still, you know, collecting a lot of this data. But anecdotally, from what I've heard, there's been about a dozen to 15 cases so far identified. Now, again, I don't know if those are students who were living on campus, students who were living off campus, students who may have taken a test before they showed up and it took a while for the results to get in. But the last numbers that I heard in terms of officially was that we were still below 1%. Right. Now, again, those numbers were numbers that I'd heard, I believe it was Friday, perhaps Saturday. But again, that's before classes started. That's before all of this really started going on. So again, for me, the number to really be looking at is early next week, because if that has gone up considerably, that's when we really need to start thinking about things.
Yeah. So when you say 1%, that's really the positivity rate that you've got right now, 1%. Of those
tests. A little bit below that, yeah.
Yeah, 1% of those tested turned out positive, which is a good number. I guess anything, they're figuring now, aren't they, anything below 5 or 4 is a good number.
Yeah, well, and again, this is one of the tricky things is that some people say, well, if you get above 5, you're in big trouble. If you get above 10, you're in big trouble, right? And so those numbers are sort of flux. But again, as you pointed out, in the opening quote in the New York Times, it's amazing how quickly you can go from 10 cases to 100 cases.
No, yeah.
And on what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, this is not something that's a slow spreader. You get group of people who have it, in a large group of people without face masks, and instantly sort of everybody can have it. And again, a lot of times young people are healthier, so they're carrying it, but they don't even show symptoms. Right? If you are not feeling any symptoms and you fill out that app, well, that's not as helpful as it seems to be. And so again, it is really touch and go right now. And I think for those of us faculty that are teaching face-to-face especially, we're very concerned, right? Again, these students might be healthy, but I'm older and have some health issues. And so I have certain concerns. One thing that I will say that I'm really happy about SU with, that's not really true at some other universities, is that faculty have been given the total choice about whether or not to continue teaching online. So if, for example, next week the numbers go up in a way that I'm not comfortable with, I will, and I hate the idea of doing this, but I will switch my classes to being over Zoom. It's just not worth the risk. But again, I am grateful that they have given faculty the full flexibility for that. That being said, there are a couple of disciplines that face-to-face is much more integral to what they do. We talked about this last time, hard sciences, labs,
right,
but also nursing. And so, you know, some of those programs are much more tied to face-to-face and have a much more difficult time pivoting than I would, for example, teach a literature course.
My grandson is going to back to college in the fall, and he was given a self-testing kit. Is SU providing self-testing kits to students, or are you not using that protocol yet?
No, we have not used that yet. Again, there may be discussions for that. One of the other challenges is that a lot of these materials like this are in very short supply. Most colleges start within sort of a roughly 3-week window, and colleges who ordered it first and ordered it in large bulk. So again, larger universities got the lion's share of a lot of this kind of stuff. So no, other than the thermometer and the testing app, right now, the plan, from what I understand, is just this sort of random sampling of catching people on campus and testing them. Again, it is not forced, so people can decline, from what I understand, which is somewhat problematic, but at this point, that seems to be about the best that we can do. And sadly, just hope for the best. It's not a solid plan always, just to hope for the best. But I do believe that SU has done what it can do, realistically. Again, there were some concerns, as I mentioned before, about some student testing not either having been done or having been recorded. That's a little troubling, but I'm hoping that is getting worked out this week, and we'll just have to sort of see.
It's going to be very interesting for you to see what these next 2 weeks are going to bring the university conducts this experiment in a sense of education in the time of COVID-19. I understand that your term for administrative duties, Adam, have now ended, and you are back in the ranks of the classroom. I'm just thinking that it must be incredibly difficult now, because in a classroom, you walk in, you know what to do, you know how to do it, you've done it many times before. Now, am I teaching in person? Am I teaching on Zoom? What in the world am I doing here? And how am I going to get through to these students? So you started off with Zoom with your classes, I think you said. How did that go? And how did you adjust to using the computer to teach your students?
Yeah, I didn't teach at all in the spring semester for my duties as Senate president and department chair. You know, but I'd gotten kind of used to Zoom through the sheer volume of meetings that I'd been to. My first day of classes is not too heavy hitting. You know, it's kind of working through the syllabus, course expectations.
But what are you teaching, Adam? So give us the context here.
I'm teaching two sections of a general education course called Aspects of the Novel, right? And this is a course almost entirely populated by non-majors. They're taking it for their Gen Ed Lit credit. And so those courses tend to be large. So each one of those has 24 students in it. And so again, that is, sort of the bread and butter of English departments, is first year composition, sort of introductory literature courses. You know, it's awkward, seeing 24 faces on a small sort of screen is really complicated, particularly if I ask a question and somebody puts their hand up and they have to really, dramatically wave for me to see it in a field of 25 faces. The other class I'm teaching is an upper level course in American novel. And I have 12 students in that. And that was a little bit easier to work. But at the same time, it's a totally different dynamic than being in the classroom. I've been doing this for 14 years now, since grad school. I taught even in grad school before that. And I've always had these sort of face-to-face interactions where it's not just seeing a student's face, it's reading body language, seeing how they react to things. And it's a totally different sort of experience. You know, teaching live over Zoom is closer to face-to-face than fully online. Right? Fully online classes, for example, would be I would record a lecture and just post it online. Students can look at it whenever they want. All the materials are posted online. And so that takes out really most of the interaction, at least live interaction between faculty and students. You know, I am hoping to meet with my classes face-to-face on Thursday, tomorrow. But again, I've already got one student who has said that she has contracted COVID. So what the reality will be is that there will be some students who probably end up having to Zoom into some of these classes. And again, as we move forward, you know, faculty who are teaching face-to-face are going to be doing it face-to-face and Zoom at the same time in some ways. The classrooms are set up for this, thankfully. But at the same time, it's a different sort of environment. You know, even if you've got a camera on a tripod, it's set to look at about a 6-foot space in a classroom, where many of us who teach face-to-face are much more accustomed to moving around as freely as we want to, where now we know we have to stay within that range so students can see us on Zoom. You know, teaching face-to-face also requires the face mask, which is muffling and, you know, just its own complications.
Are you wearing a face mask? Are you masked as well?
I am. You know, I'm in my office with the door closed right now.
Oh, that's right.
I have it all off. But anywhere else on campus,
Of course.
Everyone must be masked up. And so, you know, they distributed some masks, and you know, faculty and students have gotten their own. But again, you know, teaching face to face with somebody in a mask, you're missing a lot of the facial expressions that you're used to getting from students.
No, I was just going to ask Adam, and we've only got a couple of minutes left. In terms of using the computer and Zoom, are you using PowerPoint at all? What kind of tools are you using in conjunction with Zoom?
Yeah, you know, I think it varies from faculty member to faculty member. But
no, I meant you. How about you personally?
Me personally, I've got some PowerPoints for some sort of, you know, pre-planned lecture ideas or individual moments. But a lot of times, you know, teaching requires sort of being in that moment, right? Being face-to-face and a student asks a question and you very quickly have to respond. And so, you know, Zoom has the capacity for this chalkboard sort of function that you can type in. And so I've been doing that some. I know that in one of the classrooms I teach in, there's a document camera, and so I may just put down a piece of paper and write on that and have it projected.
Oh, okay.
Because again, the challenge is for the students in the classroom, and increasingly as we move forward, the students who are Zooming in, to all be able to see this at once. Again, the challenge with the PowerPoint or the Zoom chalkboard is that that's the bulk of what they can see, right? They can't see me as much anymore. They can only see that. And so there's a lot of having to go back and forth. It's, you know, it's not difficult, but it's a complication that really slows things down.
Well, there's clearly a real.
I'm hoping to get better.
Well, I'm sure you're excellent, and there's clearly a there's clearly a separation with the students very quickly. I would love to take your American novel course. In that course, what is your favorite novel to teach?
In this particular course, it's the American novel from 1895 to about 1945 or 1925. And, you know, there's a couple of them. You know, my personal favorite is Stephen Crane's Maggie, A Girl of the Streets. That's what we open up with. That's just a personal favorite. And I love teaching it. But there's another novel, the second novel that we're doing, the important literary text, but that are texts that can give us something to talk about given the moment that we're in. You know, I considered doing a class on literature in isolation this semester, but I thought that might be a little bit too depressing. So I'll perhaps bring that up during the next pandemic.
Well, Dr. Wood, thank you very much for joining me this morning on Delmarva Today. And clearly, I hope you'll come back in a month or so and update us again on how Salisbury University plans are working out with the coronavirus and how your Zoom teaching is going again. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.